stick right here, because here we go.
I don't know why. Stick right here, because here we go.
Okay, here we go again. Hello, and welcome to Talking Too Loud with Chris Savage. I'm your host, Chris Savage, and I'm joined, as always, by my producer extraordinaire, Sylvie Lubow. Sylvie.
Hello. We both did that on purpose? I don't know.
A lot of head nods.
Coordinating.
Well, we've got a great episode for you today, because the thing we're talking too loud about this week, the question we've been kicking around our old noggins is, do startup founders have to be a little bit crazy to start a company? What do you think?
I think so. I think just a hint of crazy.
Just a hint of crazy. Yes. And to answer that question in more detail, we've invited Joe LeMay, who is the co-founder of Rocketbook. And we went deep with Joe on how an idea to create a microwavable notebook that is erased in the microwave, which is, yes, this crazy idea, went on Shark Tank, all this stuff, grew into a $50 million business that was recently acquired by Bic. And so Joe's story is pretty crazy, wild end, and we're going to get into all of that. But obviously, first, Sylvie, I have to ask you, what's got you talking too loud?
You know what? I just did the pretty thing, and I have to say, I've been rewatching Curb. I was never like a regular watcher. Yeah. I was kind of like a handful here and there.
Okay.
And now I'm like back to the beginning.
Really? All the way back?
All the way back. And okay. Things look so dated. They look ancient.
Yes.
But it is so funny. And Larry David just gets himself into scenarios that I'm like, how? But then some are very relatable. Like, I watched an episode where he went to a party, mm-hmm. went to the bathroom at the party, okay. Love a party.
Yeah.
No lock on the bathroom. Mm. So he's trying to like hold the door with one hand.
Yeah.
And I feel like I've been in that situation. You got to tell somebody, like,
situation.
You got to watch. You got to wait outside the door. So some of these things are just really, they're cracking me up. And some of them I'm like, sir, you need assistance. You need help.
But not too much help, because then, then we wouldn't have story arcs. We wouldn't have no show. So we... I've seen some interviews with him recently. He was on like Conan's show and some other ones. And like, he is so funny. Like, funny. And a lot of them, a lot of the interviews are like, so you have permission to like be this guy on Curb now, right? And he's like, yes, I do. It's like you played a character and then it changed, like in his life. He gets to get away with all this stuff now, or before he couldn't. It's so funny.
He's like, Larry David.
Yeah.
It's who I am now.
Yeah.
It's great. Yeah. What's got you talking too loud?
You know, I think for me right now, it's that, do you remember I got flooded last summer?
We're always talking about floods on this show.
And we're building back better. And the building back better is about to be done any day now. And I cannot wait. I'm so excited to go back down into the playroom and just watch some action movies.
Play
really,
your heart out.
Really loud. That's like what I want to do, is just like be there in this new space that looks eerily like the original. and just be done with construction. It always seems fun. Let's remodel this thing. And it's like, you know what? Just like anything hard, there's a lot of decisions, a lot of complexities, a lot of trade-offs, a lot of coordination. There's budgets, there's shortfalls, there's other things. There's all this. It's a lot. So I can't wait to be done. And that will be happening any day now.
I can't wait. I want The Fugitive to be the first movie that you watch, even though I know it's going to be San Andreas.
It's not. It's not going to be San Andreas.
Okay.
Taking a break.
Take it
Fugitive
a break.
Is an amazing idea, though. I mean, I haven't seen that movie in so long.
Hits every time.
It hits. I mean, if you haven't seen The Fugitive, go see it. And if you're ready for a great interview with Joe LeMay, stick right here, because here we go.
Hi, I'm Frank, the ad guy.
Frank, the ad guy.
These days, it feels like the marketing playbook is constantly changing. It's hard to know what actually works and what doesn't. So luckily, there's HubSpot's 2024 State of Marketing Report. It's the all-in-one guide for what's trending in marketing this year and how you can leverage today's strategies to build awareness, increase engagement, and boost growth. So don't get stuck in the past. Make marketing work for you now. Visit HubSpot.com/stateofmarketing to get your free copy of the report. Looking to harness the power of video for your business? Whether you're hosting webinars, onboarding new customers, or creating a spiffy landing page, video is key to making an impact. And that's where Wistia comes in. With our complete video marketing platform, we help you create, host, and share videos that not only get views, they also get results. And the cherry on top? Wistia's in-depth analytics and handy email forms. They're the perfect tools for lead generation and understanding your audience. So if you're ready to level up your capital V video marketing strategy, head on over to wistia.com/TTL. That's WISTIA.com/TTL. And don't forget to follow at Wistia on social media for more tips, tricks, and video treats. And now, back to the podcast.
Hey, Joe, what's up, man? How are you?
Chris Savage. What's up, my man?
I'm excited to have you on the show. And thank you for having me on your brand new podcast. Can't wait for that to come out.
Yeah, yours is going to be a great episode. We had a great chat there. So hopefully I can return the favor.
That was really fun.
You got to match the vibe.
Got to match the vibe. And for people who don't know, brand new podcast, what's the podcast called?
It's called Eating Glass. So it's a reference to what some people have said that creating a startup is like eating glass and staring into the abyss. And I definitely found that to be the case sometimes. And I felt like, you know, I've always consumed a lot of startup related media to help me sort of have the right mindset. But I've always found it to be a little bit, you know, Disney-fied in a way. So I want to get into the more gory details, some of the pain, some of the drama, so that the glorious ending hopefully is even more satisfying.
Perfect. Well, you know, we're going to make sure on this episode that not only are we talking too loud, but we get you eating a little glass for the crossover. So first of all, obviously, the show is called Talking Too Loud because, I mean, even when we were doing the setup right now, Sylvie's like, hey, Savage, like, turn down your microphone. You're screaming. Because when I get excited, I cannot control the volume of my voice. It's still happening. So we'd love to start the show by asking you, our guest, Joe, like, what's got you talking to you right now? What's got you excited today?
Oh, today. Well, today I wrote a post on LinkedIn. It's kind of provocative, which is, all right, you might think it's kind of gross or weird, but I've stopped using soap on my body. Right. Meaning soap has like is really a salt made of fatty acids, which has a hydrophilic head and a hydrophobic tail molecularly. So it grabs onto, you know, dirt and stuff, but oils mostly. And then the hydrophilic head makes it wash away. So it's like it's very effective at stripping you completely of oils and even your good bacteria, which you really, really need. And I stumbled into this weird practice out of necessity for myself. So the last couple years, I got insanely into jiu-jitsu, which is this really gross practice of waking up every morning and sweating over other gross men for hours at a time as we attempt to wrestle each other.
Oh, jiu-jitsu.
Yeah, I got it.
And yeah. You know, you get these like little micro tears in your skin because you're wrestling and you're in a pathogen rich environment as well. And so you'd think that just washing yourself a lot before and after would do the trick. And we have defense wipes, which are antibacterial and all of this. And but lo and behold, you know, I kept getting these little staph infections, and you don't want them to become big.
Oh God, I'm scared of those.
Really scary stuff. And so I take oral antibiotics. So I've taken like 4 or 5 doses of these things in the past year or so. But I also got to thinking, you know, the big legends in the sport that are actually good at the sport have actually spoken out, like their gut is demolished.
By the antibiotics.
Kind of almost died by some of their antibiotic use. And so it got me thinking, and I heard a little bit others doing it, like, what if I just stop using soap entirely? You know, take showers regularly, of course, right? But reserve soap for your asshole and your hands. Right? That's that's what we should do, right? Because the rest of it, we need to keep the oils on our skin. It protects us. There's other forms of bacteria that are super important to crowd out the Staph aureus, which are the really dangerous stuff. So once you strip yourself of all of your other bacteria in your microbiome, that like leaves a lot of opportunity for the bad staph to come on board. And since I stopped using soap all over my body, I've stopped having staph infections and my skin is better. So, and I like posting about it on LinkedIn because it gets people upset.
It seems like something that you would never see on LinkedIn, which is why I'm sure it works. That's amazing.
Yeah, and there might be a product in it. Who knows? Part of the reason I'm talking about it is it could be a product
in
it.
No soap, soap. No soap.
You know?
Yeah. That's it.
But like you had a post today, which was about, you know, sometimes why you've got a great idea and it doesn't take off because habits are incredibly hard to change. So this would take a lot of evangelism to actually get somebody to change their habits. But I'm hearing from people, onesie-twosies, saying that they're going to try not using soap for a little while. We'll see if that turns into a movement, and that's my next move.
Well, it's interesting because, like, even if people are not using soap, most people wouldn't dare say it, you know?
Where do you fall on deodorant? Are we yay or nay?
I use it sometimes, but I don't use the ammonium products, right?
Like the antiperspirant?
Yeah, like the antiperspirant. So
classic.
That's interesting, yeah. Yeah. The antiperspirant was definitely, it's funny, I cannot believe I'm talking about this right now. Damn it, Joe. But, like, it's funny, I tried switching from, like, antiperspirant to not, to just deodorant, and it worked better.
Yeah, it's interesting. I don't know what the toiletry industrial complex has us going through, but it's a little bit much, and I think it's not natural. So I'm trying to figure that out. That's what happens maybe when you're unemployed, a post-technologist unemployment sabbatical.
But I do think it's interesting because we're talking about, like, unconventional ideas. Right. Mm. Like we're exploring an unconventional idea, which is like, hey, maybe what if it's better for you not to use soap? Which actually brings me back to where you start in the first place, in a sense. So you start Rocketbook, very unconventional idea. Can you tell the audience, like, what is Rocketbook? Why'd you start the business?
Oh, man, I might have to break the length of your podcast format. I'll try to keep
that's
it
fine.
Short.
Don't just
sweet.
Go. Don't worry.
So I'll start with the product that it's well known for today. It's a reusable pen and paper notebook. Right? There's no hardware in it. It's not a notebook like a computer notebook. It's pen and paper, right? But the pages are synthetic. They're made of a special polymer with a nice coating, so it's a nice writing surface. But you need a little bit of water, and presto, it all comes off perfectly. So it's this infinitely reusable paper and pen notebook. But that wasn't our first product, not by a stretch. Going back to the original idea that got me set off on this was I'd like to say that I had like some problem that came up first, right? You're supposed to have something for PR that's really short and sweet. And ours was this. I was in a meeting and it was so important and I had prepared a lot and I reached into my notebook and grabbed my notebook and I had the wrong notebook with me. It's not exactly the truth, but made for a tidy story. The truth was that I was a tech guy.
You were sitting on the toilet. Not using soap.
I was sitting on a plane. I had just used the Uber app to scan a credit card in for the first time. And I had said to myself, well, what else? All right. The device is now doing computation of photos that it's taking and then doing some computer vision. Awesome. And I went to sleep on a plane. I like woke up and I was just like, wait a minute. The whiteboard problem, which was a problem that I was vexed by. And what that was like, sometimes I'd have to jump on a plane as a software engineer just to get in a room with a whiteboard with somebody. And I thought, maybe we could come up with a solution that only uses your device. So you just open up what was called the Rocket Board app, and you point it at your regular whiteboard, and it would see the whiteboard, and basically stream it to a web page. So anybody with a web link could follow along with what you're writing on the whiteboard. Because we've all been there when we're like, in a meeting room, writing on a whiteboard, but there's like one person on the phone who can't see. So I was like trying to fix that. And I thought making an app to do that would be just a simple solution that could come in handy a lot of the time. I sort of got it to work. I was working on it part-time, nights and weekends while I was at my day job at Salesforce. And I made a pretty good video. It was hosted on Wistia, legit. And at the time, you guys had published some code of how to like have your backdrop of the web page be a video that just like kind of turns on as soon as you land it. And I just stole that code and made my own landing page. So you saw a video of somebody using a whiteboard, then a device picking it up, and then somebody else looking at it remotely. So it was just a very quick storytelling thing. And then you could press play and see the whole video and demo, put your email address right there. And once it got up on Product Hunt, I got like 20,000 signups, and I felt like, this is really good. Like, you know, when you're getting like 500 email addresses every day, like, wow, people really want this, at least according to the video. So that was my MVP, you know, just getting positive feedback. I was developing the product. It sort of worked enough for me to like quit my job and say, I have to do this full time. Meanwhile, I had three kids at the time. You know, I had a real job, but I decided this is really cool. I wanted to like make something, right? And my only ambition was to be able to work on a product that I thought was really cool and make enough money just to be able to, you know, send my kids to college and keep my house and not go completely broke. I didn't have like necessarily huge ambitions. I was psyched to quit my job at a corporation. So I started to work on it. But what would happen is the device would even get really hot because I'm doing streaming and computer vision and all this. So I'm like churning customers like crazy over the course of 3 or 4 months. And I was running out of my own personal savings very, very fast, too, because I also had some developers who I had hired to help me with it. And so as I probably only had like 3 or 4 months left of runway left, and it clearly wasn't going to work fast enough for me to like be able to ride out those 3 or 4 months and be able to sustain. So I was kicking myself and saying, how could I turn this into a product that I could monetize faster? And it was like another situation where I just kind of like woke up with an idea after I had been mulling over it, you know, a lot. And I was like, I got it, a notebook. I can take this scanning technology that I've sort of built, this software, and have it scan a page out of a book. But instead of just be a scanning app, it should do more stuff. And the book should have proprietary stuff on the page so I can justify the sale of a notebook, which I was excited about because I was also obsessed with the idea of crowdfunding at the time. You know, Kickstarter was doing some pretty interesting stuff, was still pretty interesting back then in like 2014. Still is, but it was really interesting then. So I had it. I was like, I've got this notebook. I'm going to sell it. It's going to scan things in. And then I started to think, well, if I'm scanning in the pages, perhaps I can make a reusable notebook since, you know, copies are already kept. So I started investigating different types of pens. I was going to launch with a whiteboard style notebook where the pen would just be like a thin whiteboard marker. But I had some other ideas as well. At the time, Jason Calacanis, who some people in startup circles might know really, really well, he's a sort of famous angel investor, was doing a launch festival, and he tweeted out a request for stealth startups. And I sent him a little video of, it was like the worst little video ever, of this new product I was thinking of called Rocket Book. And he loved it. He's like, I write with a pen. I'm using these digital pens. They kind of suck. Like, I'd love to see a new solution. Can you get out here to California in a few weeks and launch this thing on stage with the other startups at my festival? I'm like, cool. I go out there. I rehearse with him, which is mandatory. One thing he said was like, you cannot do this demo alone. You have to bring somebody with you, right? So I was like solo founder at the time.
So you've pitched him like to just, so I understand. You've done the whiteboard at this point. You're now evolving towards the notebook. You want to have the proprietary notebook. You're investigating, like, should this be a whiteboard notebook or not, basically.
Yeah.
You see him, and he says he's doing this event. You're like, oh, I should pitch at this thing.
He invites me.
You get there by yourself.
Yeah.
Ready to pitch. And he's like, you can't do this by yourself.
Exactly. And I didn't know that before I flew out there. I had no idea that I could demo this by myself. He's like, no, you need to have a demo guy and a pitch person, right?
That's crazy. How
it goes. So I was scrambling to find somebody to go out with me to pitch this thing. So I called up a bunch of friends, but one of them was this guy, Jake Epstein, who I knew, you know, I went to school with his brother, and he was always kind of tinkering with some startup stuff, and we always kept in touch. And I called him up. He's like, how's that rocket board thing going? I'm like, well, I'm onto a new thing called Rocket Book. And in the next 20 minutes, I'm going to try to convince you to fly out to me to California from Boston to launch this thing on stage. He's like, that sounds really cool. I'm kind of busy. I've got a job and I'm working on my own smart helmet thing. And I'm going to launch a Kickstarter and all of this stuff, too. But I'm super busy. But, you know, we got to talking, and eventually he was like, you know what? F- it, let's go. I'll go out there and help you. You got to help me with my video too for my product. And we just had like this little startup boot camp for a week where we rented an Airbnb. I rented a nice one so we could make some nice videos. We just got ready for the launch festival. I had another rehearsal over with Jason Calacanis, and one of his friends who was like a mock judge, who is a Sequoia Capital partner, said something like, cool, so like you got this book, you're going to sell some books, but like what's next? And I was vague. I said, well, we've got some digital enhancements and we have some physical innovations planned as well that I'm not ready to announce yet. And Jason said, stop. Who the f*** do you think you are? You think you're the Elon Musk of notebooks? Like a Sequoia Capital partner just asked you about your roadmap. Don't be vague. I said, all right, well, I explained a bunch of things, but he stopped me here when I said, and I also have another idea for the physical notebook. When you want to erase the whole notebook, instead of wiping the pages down, you take it and you pop it in the microwave for a minute and it all erases. And then you can reuse the notebook. And that's when he said, stop. Again, he's like, you're not allowed on my stage unless that's your product. That's awesome. That's the only good thing you've said all day. And, you know, that's going to be your product. You're going to be on the cover of Wired magazine. It's going to say the end of paper. And he got all excited about this.
Yeah.
So I went back to the Airbnb. I was like, Jake, do you think we could
look what I've committed
pull
to.
This off? And mind you, we're a few days away from launching on stage, but we're also launching an Indiegogo campaign, which is the big crowdfunding campaign that I want to launch to get some money in the door. And we're just like, well, we've got some prototypes that sort of kind of work. We'll figure this out. Let's do it. Let's launch it on stage. Let's launch the microwavable version as the product. We changed the video. We changed everything in a few days. We launch it on stage. We show it with a microwave. Everyone thinks it's kind of like quirky, weird, and cool. And I say at the end, I'm like, all right, who here wants a rocket book? And, you know, there's a few hundred people in the audience, maybe 50 people raise their hand. I'm like, excellent. Go here and get yours now. Pre-order it on Indiegogo. And you could hear Jason go, oh, man. Like, he did not think that that was like a classy way to launch a product.
Yeah.
But I pulled it off and we got, you know, maybe $5,000 in one day and $7,000 the next day. But then Saturday came along and Indiegogo put us in our newsletter. And that little notification that happens every time a contributor pre-purchases a notebook from you, it just went crazy on our phones. There was like, bing, 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 bing. We thought our phones were broken or something. And we did 99K worth of pre-sales in one day. And I just like looked at Jake and I was like, this is real. Like, do you want to be my co-founder and build this with me? We're going to figure out this microwavable thing, make sure we can do this. And we gave ourselves like 6 months to deliver this thing. We thought it was plenty of time.
And so in this moment, you now have been on stage, you've pitched this vision of the thing that doesn't exist yet, but you think chemically this or scientifically you should be able to pull this off.
Yes. And, I know it's, I knew how to pull it off, right? There was already
How did you know how to pull it off?
Okay, because when I was looking up reusable, you know, erasable pens, right? One came up that was really interesting, made by Pilot. And I have one right here. And the way it works is you write on the page and the ink turns clear at 140 degrees Fahrenheit, right?
Okay.
It's just this like weak covalent bond. So if it gets a little hot, the ink turns clear. And they engineered an eraser. So when it erases, it creates enough friction to get it warm. And then instead of just rubbing around the ink, it gets warm and erases it. So I had said to myself, that's really cool. Could I erase a whole book by warming the whole book? Maybe putting it in an oven or on a hot plate. But of course, the microwave sounds like perfect, right? So I piggybacked off of this existing pen and just like made a notebook based off of like this became a platform for me to build something.
And I just love the idea of you being like, we're going to make this book. It's reusable and it comes with its own toaster. You put it right in the toaster. It just disappears. And then a new one. Yeah. Okay. So then this whole time you're like taking unconventional approaches and you're just taking it as like, of course I can figure this out, right? Like the soap thing is actually really similar, which is just like, well, I see like soap kills bacteria and it's killing the wrong stuff basically. So I want to not kill the wrong stuff. And then in this example, it's like heat kills the ink. Why can't I just heat it a different way? This seems like so obvious.
Yeah, it seems so obvious, right? And so easy. But here's the problem with the product. And we figured this out after we launched the pre-sale and after we pre-sold like 30,000 units to people all over the world, but hadn't yet delivered. if I take a notebook, write in it with this special ink, and have you put it in your microwave, maybe it'll all erase. And then put it in my microwave for about a minute, maybe only half of it will erase. Mm-hmm. And then put it in Sylvie's microwave, and then the thing will burst into flame.
Who doesn't own a microwave?
Who doesn't own a... Well,
she has a toaster, though.
Oh, you got a toaster. But someone else says it may burst into flames, right? Because every microwave is different. Mm-hmm. So this vexed us for a long time. We thought of all of these different ways to construct, including synthetic materials. We spent a good amount of money on product development firms to kind of help us solve this problem too and help us get it over the goal line by having more people test more stuff. I mean, we tried every paper from every manufacturing company in the world, including plastic papers, right, which kind of led to another product. And we're like running out of money, and we finally cracked the nut. And the way we did it, Jake really kind of devised this system. I got to give him like the credit for it. But the way we would slow everything down so it wouldn't burst into flames was you'd have to put a little mug of water in the microwave with it. And that slowed everything down. And then you knew it was done when the little logo on the front went from blue to clear, because it was a thermogenic logo that we applied on the cover. And between those two new designs, that would make it pretty universal so that it wouldn't get too hot too fast in any place. And you'd know it was done before it burst into flames, no matter how powerful your microwave was. And that allowed us to like press ship, right? We're all right, now we figured it out. Let's build 30,000 of these, get them out to people, ship them, et cetera. And then we like ran out of money before we got about half of them shipped to people. So we're completely broke. We're about 400K in the hole in order to be able to ship the remaining product out to everybody. And that's when we decided to take, like, kind of swim upstream and break a rule a little bit. So we went over to Kickstarter, which is a place where you're only allowed to launch brand new products. And what we did was we just basically launched the same thing on Kickstarter. But the way we avoided violating their terms of service was we said, okay, the rewards are the same. What someone gets is the same. But what we're funding is a completely different project. We're going to fund a Slack integration and a Trello integration and a Dropbox integration. And that's the product that we're, that's the project. So Kickstarter got in touch with us after it was successful. It was like, I think we're going to pull the plug on your campaign. You violated our terms of service. I explained it to them and they were like, oh, clever. Not cool, but clever. We're not going to. So we're in the doghouse with them for a while, but we, you know, we didn't technically.
This story is insane. I just have to say that. Keep going.
Yeah. So that's how we got out of bankruptcy the first time there.
And then, so then you get out of bankruptcy. Yeah. And then what about Shark Tank?
Yeah, then we were invited to Shark Tank. At first, I said, no, I'm not ready for that because we only had crowdfunding sales and I knew they'd like, you know, really dice us up asking us about like what our sales were and they weren't like real in-store sales. So I said no for a while. But then once we had real Shopify sales, real Amazon sales for a couple months, we said, yes, we'll go on. All right. But we didn't know if we'd be taken seriously, but we said, no matter what, we want to get attention on TV. So we decided just to like really ham it up, give a crazy demo, wear orange astronaut outfits. And, you know, I can't really talk about all the behind the scenes stuff because I'm, you know, not supposed to talk too much about Shark Tank. But it's a great episode. You should check it out. It's season 8.
The
finale. Yep. We did not get a deal. And we were basically laughed off of Shark Tank, essentially. But we came back. And we said, we need to launch more products, right? We just decided we needed to launch more. We had told the sharks, we've got a whole suite of products coming along. Now, we didn't know when that episode.
We have this day, but just wait for what's next.
Yeah, exactly. Right. We didn't know when this episode was going to air. And it really didn't air until like 9 months later. Right. So we had all of this time where we wanted to do stuff and show that we were doing well and have success. Now, during that whole microwavable thing, when we tried every paper in the world, we had tried some synthetic papers. And we noticed that with a leuco dye, which is a thermo dye, it all came off with a little bit of water. Mm. And I said, there's a product there, but we need to deliver this microwave stuff first. But there's another product there. That'll be fun to launch. So we just decided to launch basically the very similar product. It was still a rocket book, but now with a moisture erase element to it. And today, this is our core product, because as soon as we got this up on Kickstarter, it went bananas. It did well over $2 million in crowdfunding on Kickstarter and beyond. And, you know, and it really built the company that we have today. It started to make our company, you know, completely soar. By the time that we aired on Shark Tank, our company was like growing by leaps and bounds, because this product had really delivered on its promise of great reusability, and people just loved it. It was really well reviewed on Amazon. And that's when we were off to the races. We were at Techstars at the time. We were thinking we might need to raise some money, but except for taking a little bit of money from the Techstars program, which was $130K, we raised no other money. And we just grew off of our That's own amazing. Gross profits, you know, got it up to, you know, about $50 million in revenue, just based on, you know, the profitability of the company. And crowdfunding, we continue to do crowdfunding campaigns. It helped for inventory planning and things like that, but mostly just to have like an excuse to have a party for nerds all the time, like, yeah, and have new product launches and get people excited, basically.
That's amazing. Amazing that you didn't raise more money to do this too. It seems like it would be so hard to build physical products and deliver them and all the costs associated with it. And the fact that you just like kept figuring out the next way forward is super inspiring. I want to jump forward now in the story because, you know, there's so much we could talk about, but I want to jump to the acquisition. So you guys sold the business and Bic bought you, right? Which is not Pilot. You're using right. Pilot pens, but Bic came in and decided to buy the company. Yeah. And I'm wondering if you'd feel comfortable just sharing kind of like what actually happened. Like, I know you can't say all of this, like there's so much like confidential private stuff, but there's a lot in what you did, I think, to make this deal happen. That's just really, really interesting. And that we don't hear the stories that often. So if you could bring us into that as much as you can, I think that'd be really amazing.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. All right. So we got the deal signed and got, you know, most of the money for the deal upon signature in December of 2020. But really, it took a good, I think we first heard from Bic, I think it was like 3 years prior. So it really took 3 years to get the deal done from first to end. I don't know if we were intent on selling so much as we were just curious to see if we could sell the company. We owned, you know, Jake and I and some employees owned a lot of the company, and it would have been millions of dollars to us. So, you know, let's see if we could sell it, right? It would be life-changing money, even when we were, you know, still pretty young. So we got in touch with our corporate lawyer, who has done a lot of M&A. And I would say to anybody who's looking to sell a company, probably the number one thing you got to do is not just use any corporate lawyer, but link up with a corporate lawyer who does a lot of M&A. You're going to spend a lot of money with them if you do get a deal done, but if you do, it's going to be worth it. And then I got in touch with him, and he got us in touch with a few investment bankers to look at, who we interviewed, like five investment bankers, picked one who we just, you know, kind of clicked with and got his process. But just that process was educational. Having them say, here's what we think we could sell your company for based on what's going on in the market, you know, and just going through that process, super interesting. So we signed on with one. We're like, well, let's see what you can do. And so they go through their process of putting together a deck with us, putting together a one pager, emailing, you know, all of these private equity people, all of these family offices, and seeing what interest they can drum up. We ended up getting interest from, you know, some private equity players, somebody who wanted to buy like 49% of the company, but still keep me and Jake involved and things like that. All types of deals kind of percolated up. But the one that came up was from Bic, who is the competitor of the pen that we include in every book, right? Which was really interesting. And Pilot did not make a bid on us at all, which I was really surprised at, but, you know, had to accept. And we never really had a very close relationship, even though I was selling, you know, millions of their pens every year and influencing perhaps tens of millions of their pens every year, but they just never really took us seriously as a product or a partner. Yeah. They just looked at us like a customer. So I'll get that to that later. That becomes interesting. But Bic did get in touch, and here's why. So when you buy a Rocketbook off of our website or at like Target or Walmart, we get a lot of people's email addresses because they use our app. Right. And so whether you buy us off of a shelf or off our site, we still have a direct to consumer relationship with our customers, no matter what. And we had like 5 million email addresses. And that is more email addresses and very active email addresses in terms of opens, et cetera, than all of these, you know, consumer product goods who sell pens combined. It was highly unusual. We're also very profitable. But Bic, if you remember, they also sell razors. So they witnessed something happen in the razor market, which is this company, Dollar Shave Club, came up, made these crazy videos that were very influential.
Great ads,
right? Very influential to me and Jake when we put together these and how we talk to our customers. And they also had a direct-to-consumer model. And they really were disruptive in the space, right? So they saw that play out in their razor market. And they kind of saw us as a potential for that type of thing to play out in the stationery market. So they were really aggressive about being interested in us. Now, keep in mind, we still had to use Pilot pens because they have a patent on this technology. We couldn't swap it out for a Bic pen. So it was a little bit weird that they were buying us, right? We also had a supply agreement with Pilot that said upon a change in control, they would need to approve, you know, a redo of the supply agreement. So that got really awkward. I signed the deal with Bic saying I can figure this out with Pilot. And, you know, made overtures to have the conversation with Pilot. Hey, we're being bought by your competitor. You chose not to bid on us. They were not happy about it, but I didn't think that they would be that difficult. But they basically just like wouldn't take a meeting with me. They wouldn't get it done. They wouldn't approve it. They weren't saying no, but they also weren't saying yes. And I'm saying like 9 months, 10 months, 11 months have gone by while we're in the middle of a deal. And a signed term sheet.
And you need this, right? You need this to get the deal closed.
I needed to get the deal closed. Bic even said, we will not buy the company unless you get them to sign off on a new agreement and be cool with it. Because if they just decided to stop supplying us pens, our business would be like over, right? Or we'd have to come up with a new game plan to make sure that that was in case. It would be very, very disruptive.
Bic wants to buy you. You have to get Pilot to sign off. Can you tell the listeners and the viewers like what you actually did?
To get the meeting with Pilot?
Yeah, so they wouldn't meet with me, right? They just the CEO of the U.S. division like just wouldn't take a meeting with me, and we were stuck and just completely stuck. So I had talked to one of my contacts, and they said Dennis, the CEO, well, he's leaving for Japan for a while on Friday, and I was like, wait a minute, like now we're never gonna get this thing done. So I was like, guess what? I'm gonna be in your office tomorrow. In your lobby, and you're just going to have to figure out whether you're going to get me a meeting with Dennis or you're going to call the police, because one of the two is going to get me out of your offices. And they're like, all right, I hear what you're saying. Don't do that. We'll figure something out, but do not do that. I'm like, no, I really am going to do that. I'm going to do that. And so they're telling me, don't do that. Don't do that. So of course I book a ticket. I show up and I show up in their lobby, and they didn't call the cops. They did take me to a conference room. They were mad at me. Everyone was mad at me and was just like upset that I showed up and insisted on a meeting. But I got a meeting with the CEO, and he was not thrilled. But I just explained to him like what was going on, that we were still committed to our partnership with him, that we're going to continue to buy his pens and not substitute them out. This acquisition was going to help Rocketbook grow a lot. It was going to help our business with him grow, and just, you know, basically convinced him and had him understand what was going on and alleviate his fears so that he would then, you know, tell his legal team, all right, move on this. Let's get this unstuck and help Rocketbook out. And that's essentially what we did. If I hadn't done that, I don't think we would have gotten the deal done, right? And just the ability to just see that that was an impediment and just like show up and do something that was like highly awkward and highly uncomfortable to try to get a deal done. And sometimes you just, you know, and I learned that, you know, in doing enterprise sales for a long time, there'd be stories of sales guys like showing up at a customer's office and this big bold thing that they did to get a deal done, right? And I was like, I get to pull off one of these maneuvers right now. And I just sensed it.
When you decided to do that, emotionally, what state are you in when you're like in the lobby? Are you like, hell yes, it's going to happen? Are you like, I don't think this is going to happen, but I have to try? Like, bring us into your mindset in that moment.
Yeah, it was one of these things where I like, this has got a 30% chance of working. Right.
Yeah.
But if I don't do it, then I'm always going to kick myself and be like, there was one thing I could have done and I didn't do it. And I knew that it would just haunt me forever. So I showed up in like my rental car and, you know, got into their lobby, and there was like nobody there. And so I just started drinking coffee and making myself like more nervous, which I should not have done. And then a contact in marketing who I had developed a relationship came down to talk to me. It was cordial but very terse with me and said, okay, you're here. I get what you're doing. And I went up, got into the conference room, and other people started coming in. I tried to make small talk with them, but they were not having it. They were just being very, they were just pissed that I was there. And they're like,
yeah, yep, you're like, this is coming outside of how we operate. Yep, not okay.
Not okay. Yeah. But they also didn't kick me out. And when Dennis came in the room, you know, I was like, you know, I think that this is really good for all of us. And that's why I'm here. And he's like, stop it. This is good for you. You're just here to get yourself rich because you want to sell this company. And I was like, this is for me. This is really important to me. But I believe if I explain this to you, you'll see that it's good for Pilot too. So I think it's a good use of all of our time to be here. And, you know, apologies, but also sorry, not sorry. Here I am. Let's get it done.
And you're selling a lot of pens. So like at this point too, they must have been thinking like, well, we don't need to, because they could just ignore you, right? Like they don't have to, he still doesn't have to meet with you. So there must be some aspect of this too.
I don't know how much leverage I had, but I had some leverage as one of
these. You had probably some amount of leverage, mm-hmm, or even information asymmetry where it's like, well, I got to meet with Joe so I can understand like what Bic is trying to do.
Well, were you guys one of Pilot's biggest customers, do you think?
We weren't as big as like a Walmart, who probably buys tens of millions of pens from them every year, but we bought, you know, single digit millions of pens from them every year. So we were substantial.
Yeah.
So we weren't like managed like a strategic partner, but there was some salesperson who has a quota and would be hurt if we went away. Right.
Yeah.
So we got that deal done. And you know, it was, I think, a good deal for everyone involved. I think it was a smart deal. I was happy with it. I do think that 2.25 years for a founder to stay on at an acquired company without major skin in the game and huge equity or upside or something like that, I think that's too long. You know, I think 1 year is good. And that's the one takeaway I have from our earnout duration, that, you know, over 1 year is probably too much. You got to bring in the new leadership and get them engaged sooner rather than later.
When you look back now on the acquisition, that seems like one of the obvious takeaways. What are the other lessons for you that you would tell anybody if they're going through the acquisition process?
Yeah, I would say it's similar to enterprise sales, right? I don't think you really have a deal unless you've really identified a strong champion, somebody in that organization who's going to go to bat and says, we need to buy this company. Here's how it meets with our strategic objectives. And if you don't have that, you might initiate a deal, but I don't think you'll get it done because there's always these ups and downs and tense parts during a major acquisition. And you need somebody on the other side, you know, or a group of people on the other side that are highly motivated to get the deal done. And so for a big multinational, you know, multi-billion dollar corporation to buy someone who's much smaller, there's going to be some strategic imperative. And you got to like understand that and help that champion make the case over and over and over internally. So you're basically, you're partnering with somebody inside the organization, bringing them into your organization and helping them go back with many talk tracks and talking points so they can help get the deal done. Here's why we're doing the deal. Here's the strengths of the deal. Here's some cool news that they have. And the champion needs to get other people excited in their organization to get a deal done. They've got a legal team. They've got a finance team. They've got an integration team, an operations team. They've got a board of directors who you're never going to meet, but your champions are going to meet them. So you just need to basically train them how to sell your company inside the acquirer. I'd say what's really also great is to just make sure you have a lot of good news and give it out bits at a time, right? Every month, every few weeks, hey, we got some good news. This just happened. Hey, we had this promotion and it was awesome. Hey, we just launched a product and people are really liking it. It's really well reviewed, right? And just have a cadence of good things happening during the deal. I think that we did that well. And I think that without that, I don't know how we would have gotten the deal done.
That's awesome. And what are you doing now? What's next for you?
Oh, man. So I am officially unemployed right now. I give myself at least like 6 months to do nothing whatsoever, not network. I forbode myself from like even thinking of ideas or networking or anything like that. Just spent a lot of time with my kids and had an amazing summer and got out in the water a lot and just kind of recalibrated as a human being because, you know, this rocket ship ride was a lot of chaos and adrenaline, and I needed to like just kind of settle down. Now I'm helping a lot of entrepreneurs and just spending time with them. And I'm investing in some startups as well and have invested. I'm not spending a lot of time applying soap to my skin, though.
That's amazing. Well, look, Joe, thank you so much for coming on the show and sharing the story. I know it's like a very raw, very real story that we don't always get to hear about. So really appreciate hearing about the takeoff and the landing.
Yeah.
Where can people best connect with you to learn more?
Probably LinkedIn. I try to be sort of active most days on LinkedIn. Happy to be helpful to especially any entrepreneurs who are going through anything where it could be helpful.
Amazing. Thank you, sir.
Yeah. Thank you, buddy.
Hi, me again.
Frank the Ad Guy.
And this month's podcast shout-out goes out to This Old Marketing. Hosted by Joe Palizzi and Robert Rose, two content marketing experts, this show dives into the latest content marketing trends and shares ideas for how businesses can use content to attract and retain customers. Check it out at hubspot.com/podcastnetwork or wherever you listen to your podcasts. And now, back to the show.
No soap? Soapless.
No soap. No soap anywhere.
I mean, he's an unconventional thinker.
He is. I mean, that whole interview, the takeoff, the landing, my jaw was on the floor for most of it. That was crazy. I cannot imagine going up on a stage and like not having every single answer that you're hit with and just being like, we got it. And then making some promise and being like, we got it. Like that is, what is that? Because you have that too. You have, is it optimism? Is it crazy? Is it, what is it?
You know, what's interesting is I was thinking about that too. I think it's like he knew something that nobody else knew, right? Like he knew that these pens, when they were at a certain temperature, that like they would erase, right? And like that's a known thing about the pens or whatever. So I think it seems like he saw it as like pretty simple, really, which is just like, I'm just like almost like you're getting away with something. Like, I know this works and you don't know it. Like he didn't have to invent
it. He had like an ace up his sleeve. Yeah.
Yeah. That's kind of what it seems like to me. Cause I think it's funny. I feel like I have that in some ways, but I can't make it up. Like if I don't feel like I know that there's some aspect of it that we can deliver, then I can't do it. Like I can't pitch a thing I don't believe in.
Yeah, but he believed.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, he believed even if they didn't know the answer that they would find the answer. And that to me is such, it is a quality that I do think a lot of founders possess. And it's and it always leaves me pretty awestruck.
But a lot of it is like, at least for me at the beginning, it was like being naive. I'm like, this can't be that hard. And then eventually, at some point in time, I was hit with the reality of like, oh my God, this is really hard.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then even later, I was like, oh, it is hard, but I know that on this certain class of problem, we can deliver. We have the expertise. We understand what it takes. I have enough evidence to see like Wistia will crush it. Mm-hmm. And if we went too far afield, there was a part of me that would say, you can't do that. Like it's too far afield. Maybe you could learn how to do it, but it's too far afield from where you are today. So it's interesting because I think it's like somehow he knew and had enough belief, rational or not, that he could pull it off, which is cool. I mean, it's like it's really cool to hear that. And it's also so interesting that the beginning and the end are so similar, actually.
Yeah.
Of like, I'm going to make this happen. I'm
going to
make.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes. I'm going to make the impossible happen.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, even going to the meeting is not that different from getting up on the stage and pitching the brand new thing that you came up with the day before.
Totally. And I think, I guess the other thing that's jumping out at me is someone who's willing to take big swings also has to be willing to have big misses and like being laughed off of Shark Tank and being able to like get back up from being so vulnerable. Like that's another, I'm not even finishing my sentence. That's just another skill that I don't possess that many founders seem to.
You know, it was really interesting at Inbound when we interviewed Brian Halligan. And he said something that stuck with me, which was, you know, we're talking about what it was like to be CEO of HubSpot, which he no longer is, right? Chairman now, but was for a long time. And he said, well, it's two steps forwards, one step back every day. And I've thought about that because, like, it's so simple to say that, so easy to say that, but that is what the story is. And, you know, you look at these charts of, like, growth, and if you smooth them out, they look like, you know, like a whatever, exponential curve if you're lucky. But then, like, usually it's like up, 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 down, 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 up, 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 down, up, 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 down. And I think that that is a different thing to deal with. At some point, you believe you can get through it because you've been through enough downs. But it's interesting because so much in life is like that. And there's so much you can't control. I also think this is why, at least for me, meditation has been important and being really present, because you're not as stressed about the future or like worried about the past. You're just like in it. And that is easier to deal with, to like let it wash over you, than to always worry about like what's next.
Man, oh man, to live inside your brain. I'd like to do that one day.
Someday we'll meld the minds.
The next product. Got to pitch it.
I don't know if that's our next product, but
brain swaps.
All right. Well, that's probably it then. When you get to brain swaps, you know, the episode has ended. So thanks for joining us. Please don't forget to like and subscribe wherever you consume Talking Too Loud. Sign up for our email list. We're giving away hats left and right. So tell us what your favorite moment was from this episode. If you do that, you can tell us on LinkedIn. You will get your very own Talking Too Loud hat.
Hell yeah.
Hell yeah.
Talking Too Loud is brought to you by Wistia, hosted by Chris Savage, produced by me, Sylvie Lubau, along with Adam Day, executive produced by Wistia Studios. This episode was mixed by Maria Passingham of Edit Audio. Listen to Talking Too Loud wherever you listen to podcasts. And hey, rate and review us wherever you listen. And check out more content from Wistia Studios at wistia.com.